what we're going to do now is bring forward the papers from the admin session that was scheduled for tomorrow. So we'll bring forward and discuss paper 12 first.
Well, so paper 12 is the work in progress. You'll see in that list there are two new issues noted. So these are issues where we've received a submission, but you haven't yet seen it. Let's say, but it will be brought back for discussion to a future interpretations committee meeting. So we have one on IFRS 3, one on IFRS 9. Do you have any particular questions on those?
No questions. So moving then to agenda paper 13.
So agenda paper 13, I think this is something at... Sorry, Martin.
Probably one question to the work in process. How do we deal in general with outreach? So in the meanwhile, have been there some outreach, or is there a standardized approach, or
So you may have seen that in the two issues, on the IFRS 3 question, we sent an outreach request just last week on that one. So we plan that when we bring that back for discussion with you, that we will that there will be feedback from outreach on that. I think if it's helpful, or would it be helpful to talk about that? Are you sort of saying that maybe when you look at the package of papers for this month, you notice that we've got outreach done on some of those and on others not? And would it
yeah,
be helpful?
That is a little bit of yeah. background of my question. Do we have a standardized procedure, or how do we? I mean, if there is a topic on work in progress, how do we deal with the outreach to get more concrete knowledge what's happening outside? Because I mean, I guess it's always important also to have the fingers on the roots, or to have the radar screen on. I mean, each of us probably knows the topic in the relevant jurisdiction, but on the other hand, to collect as much information, how it is dealt in other countries is always suitable.
So let me explain, I suppose, what is the background to maybe what you've seen coming through in previous package of papers and in this one as well. So when we do outreach on the topic, first of all, we think, by the way, outreach is often incredibly helpful. And you can see, by the way, if I highlight in particular and think about this month's papers, if we think about, say, the commodities issue, particularly the IS 41 question around fair value measurement, also in talking about the topic we'll talk about tomorrow, IFRS 9, around clearing brokers. I think it provides a very helpful, really helpful piece of information that adds to analysis in the paper, hopefully, when we come forward to discuss with you. So we think it's an incredibly helpful piece of work that we can do. But what we do is, in working out whether we think it's important, whether we do it or not, is that we work out where we think we'll get most benefit from it, I suppose, in a sense. So where we think outreach is most helpful is obviously in understanding, as you say, what's happening in practice. So understanding, is this a question or an issue that's really widespread? Would it possibly lead to any material effects? Now, of course, doing outreach, by the way, first of all, of course, adds time in terms of allowing people enough time to do it and then doing the analysis. And it also, of course, for those very helpful people or participants in that outreach, it also takes their time. So I suppose we've tried to be slightly judicious in working out that we don't just on everything sort of ask everyone to run around and get lots of information for us. Without being sure that we think we can, that's going to be a valuable use of their time, in a sense, in moving forward. So I suppose in trying to concentrate and think about how, as the committee, we can be most efficient and effective, in a sense, in addressing issues. We kind of look now at seeing whether it makes sense in the context of the particular particular question to do outreach up front before we, you know, come and talk to you about the issue. At any stage, by the way, that obviously in talking to you, if you think that doing further outreach would be helpful, then that can always be suggested and we do that. So I suppose if I maybe pick up then and talk about, you know, maybe where we haven't, you know, where we haven't, in bringing a paper to you, we've decided that we haven't done outreach in coming to talk to you, is it's often where, so first of all, it might be where, for example, we already know that potentially the issue is widespread, or there might be a material effect, and where we already might know that is based on input the board has had from other sources around other projects, or perhaps we've been able to look at some of the accounting firm manuals and see that there's different. So you know, if we already know in a sense that that's the case, then we think it's not necessarily, you know, always the case that we might need to do extra outreach to confirm that. I think also, by the way, when we get questions in, one of the first things we often do is contact the submitter to understand, you know, the question a bit better. And an important part of that is to understand how urgent the question might be. Because again, as I say, that's weighing up that if this is a very urgent question in a sense, that where practice is saying we really, it would be so beneficial if the committee could discuss that in public and we get something in the public domain sooner rather than later in a sense, that would be helpful. And that combined with then thinking about, do we think it's a question where we think the committee can be responsive and provide an answer based on the requirements. So for example, if I take this meeting again, when we got the submission around the discount rates in Ecuador, the question actually on EPS as well, and also if I think about the question we finalised around investment entities on IFRS 10, when we spoke to the submitter on those, we understood that those were time-sensitive issues. So for example, IFRS 10 on the Ecuador issue was really relevant to people preparing their 2016 financial statements. So again, we weigh that up. We would never not do outreach then if we think it's still needed for the next step, but that's another important piece of information, I suppose, in just working out whether we think we're addressing the question in the most sort of efficient and effective way. So I suppose, and maybe by the way, the other thing to piece up, when I fed back to saying, do we have other information on something like interest and penalties, we didn't do extra outreach on that one, for example, because we spoke to people who had provided comments on that in the comment letters, you know, to the draft interpretation, and we also, because we had our preparers group last week, we thought that was a good forum to get more input. So I don't know if that's helpful. It just explains, I suppose, with each question that comes in, we have a close look to see that we're, I suppose, as I say, dealing with the question we think in the most efficient and effective way. Really using outreach, which is incredibly helpful, where we think it fills a gap to ensure that we, you know, we provide you with the most complete information you need in terms of analysis. But I suppose don't automatically do it in every case, both in terms of other people's time and in terms of the time it might add.
Okay, this in a way answered the question.
Does that mean you're generally satisfied?
No, I'm satisfied to the wide range, because I guess it's always the question: are we consistent how we do the outreach, and what are the decisive criteria? Explained that, but I guess also from the outside in, so to say, we have to demonstrate that we consider the outreach for each topic in a similar manner, and therefore I'm just focusing a little bit on that, just to avoid long-lasting discussions afterwards. Thanks.
So. 13.
Agenda paper 13, yeah. So this is one that I know, and I think hopefully the timing around this is right. It was something that we talked about at previous meetings to say that it would be not only very helpful, but I think appropriate in a sense that any of the topics that the committee have talked about and referred to the board in the context of having gone through your agenda criteria, it's one where we haven't been able to be responsive and provide education type material in the agenda decision, but there's been an identified issue that's been reported to the board because the committee has concluded rightfully according to its agenda that this is something that's too broad for it to take on. Well, what has happened to that? And I suppose that's what Agenda Paper 13 has tried to do in a sense. So what we did, first of all, in terms of sort of methodology or what you're looking at in terms of the 25 issues that are addressed in this paper, is we picked the 25 by looking at all of the discussions that the committee has had since 2012. Why did we pick that? Because that was the point when the agenda criteria, changed based on trustee review. So this paper then brings forward any of the issues where the committee concluded it was too broad. By the way, both where it very directly reported it to the... Where both there was an agenda decision issued saying it was too broad, but even those cases where maybe an agenda decision wasn't published, but it was something that was reported forward to the board. So that's a background to the 25 issues. What we've then done in this paper, of course, is go through and hopefully, close the loop in a sense to say, well, what's happened to that? Has it been picked up in a board project, has the board considered it, etc. I suppose what we find from that is, and what's set out in the appendices, is that 24 of the 25 that we've looked at, we think, are directly either picked up in a current project of the board, a future project of the board, or alternatively was very specifically and directly considered by the board as part of their, mostly as part of their agenda consultation, and they decided based on all of the input around that issue would not be added to the work, the work programme looking over the next 5 years. And that's set out in the different appendices. What that work identified for us, is then we've highlighted in the paper, one question that the committee had looked at around common control, where at the time the committee discussed it, it was thought, of course, naturally, that it might either get picked up as part of business combinations under common control, or perhaps alternatively as part of the equity method project. And at least based on where we are today in terms of board decisions around the scoping of business combinations, etc., we think it's not being necessarily directly picked up as part of either of those projects. So subject to discussing with you today, that's what we've identified that, if you wish us to, that we would highlight that we could bring back to you with a more fulsome discussion to ask you whether you think there's anything you would want to consider doing on that. So maybe with that, I'll...
Probably a very jump question. You mentioned that this is more or less the change in the due process handbook in May 2012. Was the implication what happens in between that May 2012 and today? Within the list, we have two issues which are older. What's the reason why to include them, and why other ones have been excluded, or what was the logic beyond?
I think, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
So I was going to say some my understanding.
Yeah, I think those were issues that were specifically rejected by the board after that cutoff date, so we thought it was helpful to include them. They were specifically considered and discussed after that cutoff date, so we thought it was useful to include them in this discussion. That was the main reason.
And if I remember correctly, and Java, correct me if I'm wrong, by the way, and we can clarify this, is that there was a similar paper like this discussed with you as a committee, I think back in 2012, where, so there was a similar sort of analysis, where have things gone? I think those two are ones that were identified that didn't get closed off in a sense. So I suppose we were being probably very complete by including these now.
In here for completeness.
Yeah.
Basically.
And but this is limited to only these two, or are there more?
well, I suppose those were the only two that we felt weren't sort of closed out in a previous communication, in a sense.
Okay.
So as I say, for completeness, we were just trying to make sure we covered off.
One thing I believe that the staff who are working on the financial instruments with characteristics of equity project plan to do is in the discussion paper, which we plan to publish later this year. I believe that the issues that have been left not finalised by the committee that are relevant to that project will be specifically mentioned in that discussion paper in terms of what would the outcomes be for those, so that they'll be flagged and included, so that they'll be highlighted in that paper. Yes, that was a discussion I had with the staff last week, which I think is useful for completeness.
So, and just in what you just said about the Fife project, I think my understanding is consistent with yours, although I think they may identify one or two items that will not be directly answered by Fife, but it will be a review of everything.
Yeah.
I didn't want to get people's hopes up too much.
Some of them might be addressed, and people might like how they're addressed either.
That's also true.
But yes, everything will be noted as either having been addressed, and this is how, or if they're not covered, this is what's left.
Yes.
But there will be a full coverage of those items, from what I understand, from what I've been told.
Has there been an assessment of the issues that weren't added to the work plan as to whether any of those, I mean, I think you're just bringing one issue back, the rest of them, you're assuming don't need to come back because it was really an issue for the question for the board as to whether some standard setting activity, it's not an interpretive question. The interpretive question was answered, and this was a referral to potentially change the requirements, I assume. So none of those issues, it's the assessment that none of these other issues are required to be redebated by the committee.
I suppose I'll start with our thinking when we wrote the paper, and then please, board members, come in and add to that. I suppose, as I say, that almost the timing of doing this paper, I think it's good. I thought it was, good, at least from our perspective in terms of preparing it, because the board so recently discussed the agenda consultation, so it seems like a good time to sort of discuss it. And I suppose from at least our perspective in preparing it, we were thinking that the process the board went through in deciding on its work plan, possibly, and as I say, board members correct me, a relatively insignificant part of that consideration was almost the time that the board members have available, say, during their board week and reaching their conclusions. It was almost a very big part of, I think, their decision making was what Mary alluded to today, was it was thinking about, and we had a lot of feedback in that, is what is the capacity for change in terms of the system? So both in terms of yes, or resources, and say staff resources, by the way, which cut across both the committee and the board. Yes, board member time, in a sense, or board time was a factor, but I think it wasn't a very important factor in the context of overall thinking. What do we think the system and our stakeholders, in a sense, have told us about how much change they can cope with? So I suppose, in a sense, and the board obviously consulted incredibly, widely in that. It had all of the comment letters. It talked to all of the different advisory groups. It took specific advice from the advisory council. So I suppose our thinking was that given that process has happened quite recently, and based on all of that extensive consultation, the board almost took the view that in terms of, importantly, capacity of the systems and our stakeholders for change, if they then took the calls to say those are not something we think the system can take on more change than there is already decided to be on our current working plan, and also, by the way, ongoing maintenance that comes through from the committee's work, then it would seem to, would we potentially, override that or do something different by suddenly saying, no, oh, well, it's okay, we'll just add it to.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking so much. I mean, the board's obviously decided not to add it, and it's got to prioritise things. I'm just thinking about whether an assessment has been made about the committee's response, and whether the committee needs to, given that the issue hasn't been put on the plan, is there anything further we need to do? Now, I mean, one of the issues you've recommended does come back to the committee. I'm just assuming that the other items in Appendix C, the staff has made an assessment that there doesn't need to be any further committee deliberation.
I think so, for the reason Petrina gave, which is that I sort of made an assessment of the capacity for change in the system as well.
Including the work of the committee.
Yeah. Having said that, of course, if there's anything on the list that you think is so urgent that we should flag it to the board to reconsider whether that's appropriate.
The recognition of modified financial assets.
No, other than that. Winding me up.
and commodity loans.
Probably just to understand the systematic and a little bit in the If I look through the Appendix C, I see, for example, Topic 6 and Topic 7, which both deal with pensions. And for both, in the update, we formally published that we said, okay, more or less, this is on hold until the board starts with a project on discount rate or post-employment benefits. Now the board said, okay, no, this is not our predominant priority, so to say. And I see why we have the topic IRS 28 on the agenda, or why we are going to discuss it. However, I do not see the clear distinction why we do not decide on the other two, or why they are scoped out, so to say. So where is the difference between this IRS 28 topic and these topics? Because in the update, more or less, we used the same wording, so to say. We are going to deal with these issues, or probably later on, if the board has decided how to go forward with it.
And I think the answer to that question is, for me, in the last column of paragraph, items 6 and 7 in Appendix C, because the board was asked specifically whether they felt that these issues should be addressed, and the answer was not at the moment.
Okay, so that means the board is overall not supportive and asked the committee to stop any work on.
I don't know so much that it's... Yeah. Specifically saying ask, but it's when we were making the agenda, the decisions about agenda priorities, yeah. In setting the agenda, there I'd been trying to look it up and I couldn't find specific papers, but we were aware of the issues that had been raised that were on hold pending this issue, and I think it was even with an awareness of that, I think it's not a priority. And when I was talking this morning about in the context of the IS-12 issue, when it's in front of us and we know it's not resolved, we all, I think, given who we are and why we're around this table, we want to solve it and answer it and fix it, which is a good inclination, but people in the system as a whole are saying too much change flowing in every year and disrupting things. And so whether, we said we're not going to do it as part of an overall pensions project. I think if the committee felt that if this one issue was really pressing, yep. And that either there we should address it as a narrow scope issue, that it was susceptible to addressing that way, and could be addressed. I don't think it's been put out of bounds.
Yeah.
But I don't think everyone is going to be.
That is my
if you felt like that, yeah. You could flag it, and we.
Yeah.
Could
that's my point. To ask whether the committee has a mandate, so to say, because we stopped the work and said, okay, we will see what the board is going to do with it. Mm-hmm. Now we got the feedback, the board is not covering it, so it is on us to say, okay, are we going for it or not? I mean, formally, then I would probably decide, oh, the thing is too big, we have already considered it, and make another new formalized decision, okay, we are not going to go further with it. But these might be questions raised from the outside. How is the relationship between board and interpretation committee if we officially pronounce that we stop something, shift it over to the board comes back, says, okay, no, we are busy and we do not want to see that change. So what's happening now? Is it the last word by the board, or is it then another... Probably we might also discuss this tomorrow when we have the overall huge presentation, who is doing what and what toolbox we have.
I think for me, by the way, if it's helpful, and then that's maybe hopefully to work out where to come back, is that so if when the committee has looked at this and making its agenda decision, it's concluded that the particular question can't be solved narrowly. So it is that the issue is really too broad, either, because we need to, there's a lot of wider transaction, we need to look at it more holistically or whatever. So it becomes something that bigger than the committee can take on sort of narrowly. Then I think assuming that means it's passed to the board, that almost then the board's consideration, it's not necessary to me then, I suppose based on what we said around what the board has considered in setting its agenda, I think that doesn't necessarily to me come need to come back to the committee for another conclusion, in a sense, because if the committee's decided rightly, it's too broad, so there isn't anything extra the committee can do in that context, because the committee's remit is more to take on things it could do narrowly. Now, in saying that, I think there's two things that the committee could do, and again, board members come in, is number one, you could flag it again for the board and say, look, no, based on our experience, this is really something I want you to rethink about that. I think also there's another thing to say is that potentially you could come back and say, no, well, at the time we thought you could only look at this very broadly. Actually, we think there might be something, you know, whilst we can't solve the whole issue, maybe there is something narrow that we could do that might help.
And I think I was going to say something similar, because I think that if you felt strongly that there were particular issues that should be considered for the committee to do additional work, if I look in, and if I use IAS 19 as an example, you discuss 6 and 7, I think that the challenge that the board had when we were presented with the different things that people had raised in the context of IAS 19, including the stuff that had come from the committee, was to do a proper job of revamping IAS 19 is not a trivial exercise. It's quite a big deal. So I think for the board to decide it was a good idea for the system, for something to be done, which could be done by the committee, it would need to be on the basis of an analysis of the importance of it, but also that it could be done in a more surgical, narrow, you know, targeted approach, as opposed to a big project, because that particularly is where we start to get concerned, not just about our capacity, but about the fact that we've got a very strong message from the market that after 9, 15, 16 and 17, enough.
No, from a political perspective, I'm absolutely understand that point. I'm more on a very formal perspective, so to say. Yeah, okay, so we set something or put something on hold, waiting for what the board is doing. Now we have it here on the list. Board says we are doing nothing. What we do we have to do anything on a formal basis? Therefore I said, where's the differentiation between the topics we see here, because as 28 we are now going potentially to decide to do something on, and so on.
Yes, and I suppose that then, if it's helpful just to clarify, I suppose I don't view these as necessarily on hold that have to come back to the committee. It would only come back if you think there's something gnarly. Once you've decided that it's too broad, it's almost gone to the board to consider, and at least it doesn't automatically have to get reconsidered.
Mary, do you want to come in now, or can I let Bruce in?
I'll let Bruce in.
Bruce.
Thank you. So I was just going to say, I'm kind of in the other place in terms of Appendix C. I mean, I'm comfortable with it. I mean, at the end of the day, we're a part-time committee who make recommendations to a board who are inundated with requests of things to do. And, you know, unless the board members are going to work 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, which is a good recommendation to make, I...
Are you reducing our workload?
Yeah, you guys are not going to get to everything. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And I guess I see the role of what we're doing here is we're recommending things we think should be picked up. I'm comfortable as long as the board has looked at those, they've considered them and said, look, I mean, I know you guys would love to get to everything. There's just no possible human way to do that. So I would think from our point of view, a governance step is exactly what this document has done. We've recommended something to the board. The board has considered it. They've said, look, in light of the limitations you guys have got, we can't accept it. I'm comfortable to, and I would think this is the type of document we just should have somewhere to say, we've looked at it now, as we have in this meeting, we've said that you guys aren't picking it up. I'm comfortable, I don't think we need to do anything else.
My comment to Martin's point about, is there a formal step that this committee has to take? I think, you know, Bruce has given the substance, etc., but from a formal perspective, I'd say it's on an exception basis rather than having to redo every one of these conclusions in light of the board. Having been given the summary, kind of following up on Bruce, is there anything that you see from the summary that you say, I'd like on an exception basis for this to be done, as opposed to we must redo every one of our agenda our agenda decisions in light of the agenda consultation outcome?
It was a more narrow question. On page 14, 15 of the paper, the list on IFRS 5 is pretty impressive, but still, is it possible to add an 8th item to the list?
It's not long enough.
No,
I'll do that.
And the item would be if the board could reconsider the fact the accounting practice to stop amortizing the fixed assets, because it leads to really so the this is to be accounted for prospectively, which means that in terms of comparative or comparison with the previous reporting periods, it provides really very odd results. And it means for us, we divested Vivendi, we divested massively from four out of six of our business units at, some years ago, and actually we had to provide both numbers, otherwise we could not compare anything. So with and without the amortization, so without the amortization because it was the requirements in the GAAP, but also with, because otherwise in terms of financial reporting we would have had a problem. So it'd be a good thing to if the board could add that also. If it's possible, I don't know the process.
Make the PIR really worthwhile.
Yeah.
Add more things.
We can flag it.
And what we usually do when we do PIRs is we do a sort of an initial phase where we gather issues that need to be investigated. So we can.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think this list is most useful if it is actually just a recap of things that were discussed by the committee. But then the PIR can pick up
additional.
Exactly.
So you mean we could add more than one?
My point that we haven't.
We have plenty of ideas. No problem. We have plenty of ideas.
We haven't discussed the topic in the past from a corporate perspective. I see the point. From a standard perspective, I see the underlying measurement attitude, which is in a way fair value. So depreciation is not counting from an internal controlling perspective, for sure. The business units further want to have their figures to steer and run the business as they are used to do. So therefore, when we have an overall evaluation of IFRS 5, together with all the topics of when control is lost, what happens with dilution, and so on, this could also be an additional aspect, whether this methodology of stopping the depreciation is something artificial, which does not really reflect the management view and so on. But then again, we are in a philosophical
exactly.
Just to quote you, Sue.
Okay, with that.
So maybe we'll just ask the question, and obviously the paper had highlighted one suggestion from our side as to something. Do you as a committee want that one item brought back for further discussion?
People are nodding.
I think we're obligated to take it back, given it hasn't really been dealt with, so I'm not sure we'll be able to reach resolution or to the issue, but I think we need to discuss whether it should go on the agenda.
Okay. All right. With that, we can draw today to a close, and we'll reconvene at 9:00 tomorrow morning. Thank you.